Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, driving passion for sport and communities throughout Ireland and abroad.
We may not be able to get in on the sporting action like we're used to, but we can get in on some exclusive offers from Renault. To celebrate their second year as official car partner of the GAA, Renault is offering a range of special offers on their new and used vehicles, exclusive to all GAA club members. So now you can take home the win right to your door. Check out Renault.ie/GAA to find out more.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen between them, and now they're really roaring.
And I can tell you, that there won't be a cold milk cow declared for at least a week.
Hello, everyone. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse, and I'm joined today by Oisín McConville, the Armagh footballer, by Kieran Sheehan, who's working his way back from injury and may yet play in this year's championship. And we're joined by a very special guest, the Laois manager and the former Kerry footballer, Mike Quirk. We'll be talking about football finals in all four provinces, from the return of Mayo as Connacht champions to the ominous sight of the Dublin juggernaut cranking into gear, and on again to a Munster final without Kerry. But we're going to start in Ulster. The dust is settling on this now, but the end of Mickey Hart's reign is a landmark moment in the modern history of the GAA. Oisín, you worked with Mickey Hart last Sunday covering the Down Cavan match on the BBC. How was he?
Geez, he was in exceptionally good form. I don't know what it is about intercounty management, but it's obviously a very, very stressful industry to be involved in. Mike might be able to follow that conversation, but he just seemed in really good form. He seemed happy with his decision. It wasn't exactly the Mickey Hart I was expecting to meet last Sunday. And as far as the analysis of punditry stuff, he took to that like a duck to water. I mean, like, we found it very difficult to get anything out of him before the game as far as, you know, what was going to happen or how things would develop. But at half-time, by the time half-time came, he was all over it. He was picking out things, especially at the start of the second half. When Cavan started to press, and, you know, he talked about how him and Horst Devlin, you know, were trying to preach that for the last couple of years and all that sort of thing. So I found it very interesting to be in his company. But also...
Is that the first time you were in his company?
No, I've been in his company loads of times. When I've been in his company, I didn't always speak to him now, but when I've been in his company, I've always found him 100%, and he's always made time to speak to me. We have a mutual friend, you know. We were at a wedding one day and he went out of his way to spend half of the day with myself and my wife. And so look at he's an intriguing character. I think, you know, his legacy hasn't been helped by what has happened in the last couple of years. And when I say that, I mean the fact that there was any discussion even over the fact that he was going to stay on as Tyrone manager. There was a lot of rumblings in Tyrone of people who wanted rid of him. I'm across the border in Armagh and I'm going, lads, let's be careful what you wish for, because, you know, when you consider where Tyrone were when he brought them over, where they are now, don't get me wrong, I do think, you know, change is great. He's been able to change up his backroom team at different times, and that has definitely helped them. A lot of the guys who he's brought in have moved with the modern way of playing football. He has adapted to that too. I would say that at different times Mickey Hart was uneasy with the way football was developing, certain things, and I think he brought a lot to the party last week as far as just being a recent inter-county manager who was willing to give his opinions on what was going on the pitch and his findings, you know.
He was open on that, but in terms of, like, what did you get something special from talking to him last Sunday? Did you get a special insight into how he approached things, how he read games? Was that his greatest strength as a manager?
I don't think so. I don't think it was how he read games. I think it was the people he surrounded himself with and how he was able to, as I say, keep adapting. I suppose the biggest insight I would have got into him would have been how he tried to manage people and how he tried to get the best out of people. And, you know, I heard very, very early on in Mickey Hart's tenure about how personable he was. There's been less anecdotes about that in more recent times. But how he's used his own personal tragedy and being able to bring that on to bring that into management. I suppose one thing he said last week, which I thought was really interesting, was that all of the things that have happened to him, all of the things that have happened to his team, all the things that have affected him, the win and the lose and all those sort of things, all of those things put together have shaped him as into the manager that he was and is. And that's the other thing I got out of him. The other thing I found from him last week is that Mickey Hart has absolutely no intention of drifting off into the breeze. Like, you know what I mean? He will manage again. I don't know if that's going to be inter-county level. I imagine it is, or it's going to be club level. But Mickey Hart's not finished with the game. He made that patently obvious last week in the things that he didn't say.
When you look at him, how many All-Irelands do you think you would have won if he hadn't managed Tyrone?
Wow, Jesus, what a question. We probably would have won another one, at least.
Just a two. Mike shaking his head there at that. He's a bit disappointed. He's only setting the bar at two.
Well, I think the best football we played, I think, as a team in Armagh was 05. And we were caught badly in 05 by them. And a lot of it was definitely, like, he was taking Peter Canavan off and putting him back on again when that was complete. Like, he was the original. Like, I don't remember anybody else ever having that plan. And when we heard Peter Canavan come back onto the pitch, I mean, we changed everything that day in order to try and counteract him. We took Geezer off and we put Enda McNulty on to try and mark him. Tyrone started to run through the middle of our defence and I think they picked up three of the last four scores. And that's what ended up beating us. He had a great way of whipping up the crowd. He knew when to make substitutions. And as I say, tactically, I'm not sure how much input he had. I'm sure he had quite a bit, but I do think that the people around him and the people he trusted around him were very important. And if you look at the characters that he's had from. He started in inter-county management 18 years ago to now. You'll find that all of those guys were guys who were up to date with what was going on within the inter-county game. And also, he just kept freshening it up, as in he tried to bring in younger people all the time. I mean, he brought in Peter Donnelly, you know, as S&C coach. And to lose him, I think, really stung him really badly. And, you know, he had such an input. Because he was, like, if you've seen his management team, you would say Peter Donnelly, it'll say S&C coach, but he's much more than that. He was always the guy who was on the other side of the pitch doing water boy or whatever, but he had such an input into not just how they were conditioned, but also how to play the game. And I think, you know, that was a brilliant acquisition for Monaghan, but, you know, as I say, it really stung Tyrone and Mickey Hart to lose him.
Just before we move on from that area, you spoke a couple of weeks ago about the edge in the, we'll call it relationship, between Cavan and Monaghan on the football field. There was a discernible edge between yourselves and Tyrone at the height of your rivalry. do you, is there a relationship between the players, or is this a kind of a wider cultural thing between the two counties and the supporters?
Do you
have a relationship with those players?
I would have a relationship with some of them, and there's some of them that I wouldn't. That's the best way to put it. At the time,
what do you mean by that?
Well, at the time, Paul, put it like this. At the time in the north, right, it was front page and back page news. It was hugely claustrophobic to be involved in those games. There didn't seem to be anywhere you could turn. I mean, I was working in Armagh at the time. There didn't seem to be anywhere you could turn on, you know, that you didn't have to talk or you didn't have to listen to about what was going on with Armagh and Tyrone. And to be honest, a lot of time that could be in December and January when you think, you know, I'm gonna be able to get a couple of months away from that. But as I say, it was front page and back page news. It was very claustrophobic. There was a genuine hatred when we played. And I think, you know, us winning All-Ireland in 02 was a springboard for them winning 3 after that. And I think the most important game when you go back, and the most important game in that trilogy was the 03 final. And whoever won that 03 final was going to be dominant after that. There was a huge, huge shift psychologically whenever they won in All-Ireland.
Do you regret that day?
Oh, fuck, every day of my life, Paul. I do regret it because I still think that we had opportunities to win the game, and I think we were awful that day. So, you know, we only lost the game by a point. So, you know, there's huge regrets over that. But I think as time has gone by, like, I got to know some of the Tyrone lads, and I would have a good relationship with them. But there's others I don't want to have any interest in getting to know.
Mike, do you feel the same in Kerry
about Tyrone and Armagh? They're like Mickey Hart to me, lads, is one of the greatest managers that's ever, you know, stood in the sideline. And it's strange the way, like, his team sometimes just didn't mirror the image that he himself kind of portrayed. And you know, he was such a, you know, seems like a deeply religious guy and so placid and so calm. And then you look at his team on the field and they're pulling the heads off guys and sledging and doing all sorts of stuff. So there was a kind of a bit of a contradiction there at times. But look, I don't think from where Tyrone were to where he took them, like, without question, one of the top managers that's ever been involved in a game.
How was he viewed generally in Kerry, in a Kerry dressing room, when you were in the Kerry dressing room? What way was his team considered, and what way was he considered?
I'm sure his team was considered the way they were, which was, you know, an absolutely great team. But I think that was the paradox with him all the time, that you just felt that, you know, for his team to perform the way they did, and obviously they were blessed with brilliant footballers as well, and not that it was just all, you know, negative stuff, but he just didn't fit the way that the team played, and it was almost that there was something, you know, there was something behind it, there was something behind the cloak, like that, you know, he had these guys absolutely wound to the last when maybe the perception that he himself, you know, carried wasn't of that. But there's no question. I mean, those teams that played against Kerry were exceptional teams, the same times that Oisín is talking about. And he was the guy that created all that. And they came from nowhere. And they developed a style of play that suited the guys that they had. And geez, they maximised it and got every last drop out of each other. And, you know, the fact that he's still managing all this time and still being a really relevant force in Gaelic football, you know, he's probably been a victim of his own early success, really. And that's why people are maybe getting kind of fed up of him being involved this long. But, you know, for me, one of the best that's ever done it.
It will be interesting to see where he moves on to next. And we'll move on to the Munster football final. Mike, what's it like to be a Kerry man in the week of a Munster football final, preparing to watch Cork play Tipperary?
Yeah, it's strange. It's very strange, yeah. You know, I'm looking at all the Bloody Sunday stuff and looking at the Tipperary jerseys and saying what a fantastic historical day to be involved in playing. And I'm sure for the Kerry guys, they'll be disgusted to have missed out. But, you know...
Why did it happen? Why are they missing out?
Because they weren't good enough on the day. And that's the way when you're playing knockout football against teams like, you know, people always go on about Kerry, you know, building up Cork. Kerry people build up Cork because they know that, that fear and that threat is always there, that they're always capable of beating you on a day. And this doesn't, like, that's the way it's always been in Munster. And no matter how poor Cork might be going or how poor Kerry might be going, that game is a toss of a coin an awful lot of time. And that's what it was last, you know, whenever it was 2 weeks ago. Bad weather, bad football a lot of the times, but Cork hung in there and hung in there and they got their rewards. Didn't play particularly brilliant on the night or anything like that, but they did what they had to do and got a great result.
And how do you see next weekend's game? How do you see Cork Tipperary?
A little bit like Kerry and Cork. I mean, obviously Cork are going to go into the game as favourites and rightly so. And you know, by all accounts, they should be the ones that win the game. But you know, Tipperary, Conor Reardon back into the mix, the whole thing. I wouldn't have it as clear cut as maybe a lot of other people will. No, I'd still be confident that Cork will win that game, but I wouldn't be writing off Tipperary on the occasion that it is on a one-off game. With the boost that Conor Reardon's been training with them, and he comes back into the thing, even if he doesn't start the game, it's just a big psychological boost. We played them in a challenge game going back a few weeks before we started, and they were talking then about trying to get Colin cleared to be able to play. So it's obviously been going on for a little bit, and you know, they've got forwards that can hurt you, and in Gaelic football today, in any kind of conditions, if you've got forwards like Sweeney and these guys, they can put up a score. So Cork will have it all to do to make sure they get the win.
Ciarán, Colin Reardon coming back in. How well do you know Colin?
I haven't met Colin personally, but he'd be on our WhatsApp group there with the lads that are over in Australia at the moment. And we'd be kind of communicating that way. But I've obviously, you keep a close eye on all the Irish lads when they're playing over. He was one that developed really quickly. His pace and power was something that kind of, I suppose, got him onto the Sydney Swan senior side initially. And he's a very skillful guy as well. But I think he's certainly a player that Cork need to worry about to a certain degree, and need to, you know, plan around how you deal with the likes of Colin Reardon. I think his direct running and breaking the line is where we'll and Cork will kind of focus on trying to stop that as much as possible.
Will he play midfield?
I'm not sure. I don't know enough about what he's been doing with Tip over the last number of weeks. He's traditionally a halfback in AFL, no, two very different games. So whether he goes to halfback line or midfield, from a personal point of view, I would think he might go midfield based on his size. But in saying that, I don't know how Tip are going to plan for us as well. They might, you know, have some tactic there that, you know, puts Colin in a halfback position that, you know, suits them more so. Look, it'll just be a case of wait to see where he lines out, but he's certainly someone that we've said, you know, might be someone that we'll need to get a handle on.
When you've looked at Tipperary, where do you think they're also strong?
The obvious one being I suppose their forwards, Sweeney and Quinlivan, they're obviously the two mainstay names there. Just pure footballers, can, you know, likes of Sweeney there can kick a score off a step, you know. These are the type of guys that you really have to clamp down on. But in saying that, look, they've a good forward line built around these guys as well. You know, working forwards that get the ball into their hands at the right times and get them in the right position. So, look, I think they're very strong up top. I do think the running pace of the likes of Robbie Kiely, you know, Brian Fox when he came on, I think was, you know, I don't know if he'd be starting at the weekend, but he's a guy that's been around a long time, has, you know, a lot of experience. I've come up against him a couple of times and he's absolutely got the better of me. So he's the type of guy that, you know, can kind of lift the team. But I just think overall, I think they've been well balanced. I think over the last number of weeks, they've actually put themselves in a really good spot. I don't think they play particularly well against Limerick. And I think they know that, which again puts them in a good spot coming into a Munster final. Because, you know, that big performance is coming. And look, I just think it's certainly, as Mike said there, like Tip are a team that always kind of, you know, they show up. Like the way I put it is, Cork need to be a team that is going to be hunting rather than be hunted, and that needs to start right from the first whistle. It is a case of hunter be hunted, because the way Tip, you know, the last thing you want to do is get in a dogfight with Tip.
You sound like a man who's a little bit worried, if you don't mind me saying so, because the week before the Munster final, you were saying very clearly, Cork will do this, Cork will do that. And now you're saying Cork need to. That's a fairly serious psychological shift.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is because, look, there's always going to be concern there when you're coming into a Munster final after beating Kerry. Everything's kind of lining up for this typical, you know, as you'd see, I know people are saying it, you can't hide away from it, that people are saying, you know, it'd be like Cork now to lose the Munster final, and that's the reality of it. That's the way people are talking. But look, I don't think that's the case, right? And I said this, as you said there in a couple of podcasts ago about Cork and this group, particular group of players, they're a different group of players to what I've watched over the last number of years. But I've been involved with them this year. And I think the way they're going to approach this game is we're not going to worry about what happened, you know, previously. We're not going to worry about what's going to happen after this game. This game is the be all or end all at the moment for Cork football. And yes, there's an element of worry. And yes, there's always going to be an element of worry coming into a Munster final. But it's a huge, huge game. There's a number of different ways Cork can, you know, stick to the process and stick to what they know and what they've done against Kerry. And I think that's the most important thing.
Do you have a sports psychologist in the Cork senior football squad, with this Cork senior football squad?
We do.
Busy
this week. Look, there's a number of different factors, like here in relation to this psychology piece. Look, the mindset is hugely, hugely important in how we approach this game. You know, we've a lot of lads, younger lads, guys that would have, you know, played under 20 last year that come into this group. And we saw from the Kerry game, the likes of Sean Meehan, Mara Shanley, these guys who are younger guys. And the core group of lads are younger. So I think this is an important place where guys can get an edge in relation to psychology and how you face this game. And I think, you know, from that step up from under 20 to senior, that is in a place where you can get an edge.
What is the message then that the sports psychologist is using?
Look, there's a lot of things coming into play here. I think, obviously with the whole Bloody Sunday occasion, and even the smallest things like Tip are going to be wearing a different color jersey. Like how do we approach that? What's our mindset going into that? Are we visualizing, you know, playing Tip in, you know, green and white jerseys? You know, there's all these different factors that, you know, you have to think about going into this game. Tip, do they have an added motivation this Sunday using, you know, the historic side of it? What's our motivation as well? You know, it's, we're the GA, we're an association. This is our motivation as well, you know. So there's varying different factors, but I just think...
And was this work, sorry to cut across you, but is this work that the sports psychologist has been doing, is this one-on-one work or is it group? Is it with the group?
It's with the group. I think, you know, one-on-one work, I think, would be an option if guys needed it. But I think you're right. I think it's. I don't know if you're getting, is that, that's where you're getting to, but I think it is very individual. I think, you know, for example, I'll give you an example of Daniel Goulding, right? He was a player that visualized an awful lot. He was a free taker. That was his baby as such, you know, and he used to visualize over and over again before the game, you know, how he was taking the freeze, where he was taking from. And it worked. It worked for him. For me, on the flip side of that, I'd be exhausted if I tried to visualize, you know, everything I was going to do on the pitch before I went out there. I'd be a player that would be conscious of playing the game before I actually play the game, if you get me. So there's different approaches for different individuals. But if you can get a group mindset around, you know, obviously the key message is, you know, not taking Tip for granted, giving them the respect they deserve. You know, they're over the last few years, they're basically, I know David Power would be confident that, you know, they'll beat us on Sunday. You know, the last number of years, they beat us in the 2018 league down in Parky Cueve. They beat us in championship in 2016. You know, this is a lot of the same players here as well. So, but that's just speaking from the Tip side. And as I mentioned before, this is a different Cork team. So you'd be hoping that Cork will perform on Sunday.
Oisín, the psychological preparation for a game like this or for any game, how where do you stand on sports psychology?
Well, I was first introduced to sports psychology in 2002. We brought two guys in, Hugh Campbell and Des Jennings. One of them's actually still involved in Armagh. Well, he's been to other counties, but Kieran McGinney, I think he's been with Cavan, he's been with Monaghan since, but Kieran McGeaney brought him back in when he came in. So himself and Dez. And Dez is somebody that I've used everywhere I go now, you know, as far as management's concerned. I like it. To be honest, I've.
What does he do? What does he do with teams?
Well, to be honest, like, I think the impact he's had on teams is more minimal than it once was. I mean, all the work we did in 2002 was mainly, you know, around the collective, whereas it's gone more towards the individual, and I like that a little bit more. You know, tackling individual issues with individual players, and that's the way I prefer my sports psychologist to work. When I think of where Cork are at the weekend, they're in a tough place psychologically, because that's exactly what people are saying. You know what Kieran says. That's exactly what people are saying. You know, it'd be just like Cork to turn around and lose this game. And, you know, I said the last day that, you know, went before they played Kerry, there will have to be a serious shift in the mentality of Cork as a county in order to win that game. And they won the game, and there was a serious shift. And I suppose this is the next part of that journey and the next part of that shift, to see if you can back that up. But back it up in the circumstances that can back it up. If I can think of things being stacked against you, then I think Cork have things stacked against them this weekend. They have a team coming in who, first of all, wouldn't feel that they have played to the best of their ability so far. And they haven't put any more than 10 minutes of good football together. They have the historical thing behind them. That's a very interesting thing what Kieran said. I mean, I became more individualization as my career went on, especially around free kicks and stuff. But imagine closing your eyes and thinking, we're playing Tipperary at the weekend. Very, very difficult to get blue and yellow out of your head. And change that and turn up at the weekend and actually see, for a lot of teams, I don't care how many, for all of, there's 30 people in that change, in the Cork change room, I'm telling you now, there's 4 or 5 who will still turn up expecting them to be in blue and yellow, because that's just the way of the world. I introduced a sports psychologist, or tried to introduce a sports psychologist to the club before I stopped playing, just to try and impact things in a different way, to try and change things up, to try and freshen things up. We were told to stand in the circle one night, and 5 boys wouldn't go into the circle because they were coming towards the end of their career, and they didn't want to engage in any of that. I don't think that goes on anymore, but I can guarantee you there's 5 boys in that change room who are still expecting Tipperary to turn up and play in blue and yellow. And the shock on their faces whenever they realise they take off their tracksuit tops and all of a sudden they're in green and white. So,
what would you do? What do you do with those lads?
Small thing. What?
What if there's lads who don't buy into something on the team? What do you do?
Well, anytime we had something like that going on, like somebody had to change the jersey because they were playing against us, we would hang the jersey up. We had a guy who would have resourced the jersey, hung it up in the change rooms. We used to put it on the floor and walk over it before we went out, all that sort of stuff. But there was no question in your mind what colour the team was wearing at the weekend. You know, so I don't know if Cork have had the ability to go and do that, but even that, I know that sounds like a very simple thing. But once you put all of those things together, they are very, very important. And that's where, like, sometimes the psychology stuff can be just the simplest little things. And, like, I understand there has to be a huge substance behind Tipperary going and beating Cork at the weekend. But if you add in the little historical thing, if you add in you're playing for something a little bit more, it'll help. It won't get you over the line, but it'll help, and it's another little percentage along the way of that. And I think it's so important how this game starts. You know, so important how Cork start, most importantly. And that will send a signal out to everybody around the pitch, you know, whether we are Cork of old or whether we're the new Cork who are able to take Kerry out. So
for what it's worth, I think Cork have a, I think Tipperary have a huge step to make, because I watched them against Offaly in the National Football League, and I really thought they'd gone back a long way from the team that had got to an All-Ireland semi-final. I watched them against Limerick in the Munster semi-final, and I thought they were exceptionally fortunate to win that game. And it seems to me that for all you can prepare, and for all that you can put these things into your head, and for all that you can feed off history or anything else, it's still an enormous ask to go out. The ball is the same shape. The lines of the field are there. You still have to be good enough. And I take the point of there being pressure on Cork, but really, if having beaten Kerry, to not be able to close this out would be quite stunning.
He's ramping it up, Kieran.
Can I just say on that, Paul, like, if Cork were to play Tip in a semi-final, the Kerry game didn't happen. If Cork were to play Tip in a semi-final, how would you view that game? Would you say Cork, yeah, no problem, beat Tip, you know, clear favourites, better, you know, better team? Or would you say, okay, maybe Tip, you know, they've been going okay, Cork haven't been going great? Because this was the way people were thinking. Cork were playing Division 3 football. You know, they haven't been going. They obviously got promoted and everything, but at the same time, Tip only beat Tip by a point in their league game against them. How would you view that game? Because look, I
sound very much like a Kerry man in the week before that Munster semi final, trying to talk down the opposition, and it's not it's not convincing. It's a fair point, but Cork won Division 3 at a canter, and Tipperary were mired in the middle. In fact, Tipperary were fighting relegation really when it came down to it. They had to beat Leitrim on the last day, more or less, to stay up. I think on balance, it's very difficult. I think it would be very difficult as a Cork football person to accept that this is a game that should be lost, and I would do that. But we know that everything is possible. I want to move to Mike for a second. If we could move on to talk about last weekend, Mike, and it's not necessarily in terms of sports psychology, but it is in terms of how you prepare for a match. Did you think you were going to beat Dublin last Sunday?
I thought we were going to be a lot more competitive than we were.
Did you think you were going to win?
I thought there was a chance. Yeah, I thought there was a chance. It probably sounds, you know, funny or embarrassing to say it out loud, but I did. Thought we had a chance. Because if you're going into any fight and you don't think you have a chance, there's no point being there. So obviously you look back now and you say, well, it would be by 20 points or whatever it was, and you're essentially no chance. But that wasn't our mindset. We were trying to get ourselves into a place where we thought we had an opportunity to go and beat the greatest team that's ever played the game. And if you
do, you think they're that good? Do you think Dublin are the greatest team ever to play the game? Why?
I do. Because they're not finished yet. They've just done 5 in a row and they show no signs of slowing down. The quality they have, the physicality, the everything about their setup and their mentality, their psychology, the way they approach the games, the way they approach games against, you know, Laois, you know, Westmeath, games that they know, they have a belief that they're going to win that game, but they don't allow their standards to drop to a position where that game becomes a really close contest where it's only 3 or 4 points in the finish, where they put teams, you know, like Laois, like Westmeath, like whoever else they'll play, they put them to the sword by 10 plus points. They're averaging beating teams in Leinster by over 15, 16 points, whatever it is. And their ability to stay motivated to do that against those teams is what sets them apart from every other team. Like when Kerry was going really well, we still had struggles with games maybe below on Clare or Tipperary, you know, whereas Dublin just don't seem to do that. They just seem to be in such a really strong psychological place that they know their jobs and they go out and they perform no matter. It's like a golfer playing against the course and not playing against the guy they're playing against. They're trying to get as low a score on the course as they possibly can. And who they're playing against is largely irrelevant. And to have that kind of a mindset. And then you look at the likes of Brian Fenton and these guys who are 26, 27 years of age, Kilkenny, they're a special, special bunch.
And the new players that have come in, Tom Laoise, Sean Bugler, mm-hmm. how do you rate them? Paddy Small.
Look, again, like it's when you're winning by 20 points, you know, all these guys look comfortable and they look the part, and it's easy on a team that's doing that. So until they get into a proper battle and are really put to the pin of the collar, that's when we'll really know. But I mean, look, they brought guys, you know, they brought Paul Mannion off the bench, Cormac Costello, O'Brien Howard, Philly McMahon. And like out of all of them, Philly's probably the only guy maybe towards the latter stages of his career. The rest of these guys like have three or four All-Stars in the last 5 years. So, you know, when it comes down to it, whether Paul Mannion starts or Paddy Small starts, they're still going to be having these guys that have an immense quality coming off the bench or starting. And they're still in a sickeningly healthy state they just don't look like they're slowing down, which is going to be the big challenge for everybody else. Not only
have they changed, has Desi Farrell changed anything this year? Is there evidence of anything new about Dublin?
No, not that's obvious at the moment. Anyway, you know, and again, you know, we'll see maybe when they get Donegal or Mayo or Cork or whoever gives them a more of a challenge into the last 10 minutes. But, you know, for now, like we got to a point at halftime where we were relatively pleased. We had won like 80% of our own kickouts, which was something they had done very well against Westmeath. We had taken four or five of their kickouts. We had given ourselves loads of chances, and yet we found ourselves at halftime 8 points down because we couldn't, you know, our intention was to go out and be adventurous and have a crack and try and put up a score. And we didn't want to sit back and have 15 men behind the ball and just take a beating that way. We wanted to go and have a go, and we just couldn't score the ball against them. And for all their attacking talent and their, you know, their athleticism around the field, defensively, the guys, they're still so proud of the job that they're doing and do it as well as they can. But to see anything significantly different, not particularly at this point. But, you know, again, I'd like to reserve judgment on that until you actually see them in a dogfight with 10 minutes to go.
How did you take those kickouts off them?
I'd rather not say, really. No, look, we...
Did you press?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we wanted to. We spoke to the players before the game. And again, you see, like, the point you were making there, like, do teams really have a belief that they can actually go and beat Dublin? You know, that's the biggest issue. Now, obviously, there's a difference in talent and depth of the quality that you have available and different things and the resources that they have and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, it's a belief now that teams probably lack, especially in Leinster.
Can I read you something that Kevin McStay wrote this week? He's talking about what it was like managing Roscommon going up to play Dublin in, I suppose, the Super 8s and that. And he said, deep down, you know that defeat is going to be your lot. That reality pops into your brain no matter how often you try to convince yourself or your players otherwise. Teams know they don't have the stuff to live with Dublin. Is that how you felt?
Like, that's definitely a prevailing narrative that is around there. But I think that's the challenge, though. That is the challenge to get that narrative away. I mean, look, I probably shouldn't share it. Like, but what we were looking at is, like, we were looking at Dublin as the 4 minute mile in April 1954. Like, That was our metaphor. And I, you know, like we were looking at, like, nobody had broken the 4 minute mile in 1954 until Roger Bannister did it. And once Roger Bannister did it, in the next 4 years, there was 30 other people had broken the 4 minute mile. So it's about seeing somebody do it, first of all, and then that belief spreading to whereby everybody feels like they have a chance of doing it. And until that's done, that belief and that faith in your own abilities to go out and perform and really get a result against the greatest team that's there, it's not going to happen until we see others do it. And someone is going to do it eventually. Brian Fenton is not going to finish playing Gaelic football without suffering a defeat in championship. You know, I hope I don't regret that in 10 years' time, but that's the likelihood. So somebody eventually is going to do it. And when that happens, then you're going to see other teams do it, you know, shortly afterwards. And it's just to get that first one out of the way first is the biggest challenge.
Do you think your players shared your belief?
Sure, you don't ever know that, Paul. You know, you hope that, you know, like, we like to involve these fellas in it. Like, we spoke to the players. I asked them, what way do they want to approach the game? Did they want to go and put 15 men behind the ball and hide in a bunker and see how low we could keep the defeat? Or did you want to go and try and, you know, have a go and express yourself and see where it took you? Now, ultimately, it wasn't good enough. But I still think that we learned plenty in that game that can help us improve moving forward into the games that we have next year. You know, there's stuff that we did you know, defensively and on our kickouts and on their kickouts that we'll take great confidence from. And then we have to try and improve in the aspects that we didn't do so well in terms of turning that into scores and rewarding the effort and the approach that we took by putting more scores on the board. And ultimately, we weren't able to do that. But you're hoping now that because you approached the game in that way and because you got the value that we did out of it, at least for us, that we can build on it and improve and that you take fellas further along the line with you next year.
And were Leash players demoralised after that defeat?
Were they demoralised? I'm not sure if they were demoralised. I mean, we were disappointed. You know, we weren't disappointed so much at the defeat. We were disappointed that our effort hadn't been rewarded with a better offensive performance, yeah. If that makes sense. Like we would have, you know, we lost by whatever we lost by. But if we could have got ourselves to 15 or 115 was a kind of a target that we were looking at and to try and get to there. So we were really disappointed that we didn't get that joy out of the offensive side of the game. But we took a lot of positives from some of the other stuff, which sounds ridiculous, I know, when you say you got beaten by 22 points. But we'll take a lot of positives from the other stuff. You know, Meads kicked 4 points against Dublin in the Leinster final last year. And now people are saying they have a crack of doing something against them this year. So you got to take what you can from those defeats and those poor performances and build on it and try and improve, obviously, going forward.
The when you look at Dublin, though, if you were to look at it in terms of a weak spot, is there a way that you think they can be got at?
I still think, you know, they have gaps defensively where they allow you opportunities to score. You just have to be good enough to take them. Like around the middle of the field, you know, Brian Fenton is obviously, you know, he is the pick of the bunch, maybe the pick of the bunch for certainly this generation and it's in the conversation after that. But offensively, they're really, really dangerous. Their bench is really dangerous. I still think the best way you can get at them is you have to be progressive and attack and go and try and create scores and scoring opportunities and score goals. Because they will give you opportunities to score. They play the game, you know, by keeping at least, you know, five of those forwards as high up the pitch as they possibly can. Of course, they get back and are very defensive at other times, but they keep guys high enough and they're honest enough on kickouts that they will give you opportunities to score. So you just have to really go after them and see if you can put scores on the board to keep it being a game with 10, 15 minutes to go and see where that takes you. But I just think the more defensive you become against Dublin and the more happy you are to put bodies behind the ball, they're just too talented and too skilled and their decision-making is so on point that they're going to break you down eventually and their scoring is inevitable that they're going to put themselves over the top. But you have to try and have a goal and have to try and score against them. It's your only hope, really.
So the logic of what you're saying is, if you look at the way Kerry approached the championship this year, the two league games and the game against Cork, they were really defensive, putting runners up the field. That's not how you would do it.
Look, you have to marry a bit of conservatism at the back with making sure that you have enough talent up front to get your scores. Now, Kerry are in a different position because they have guys like Clifford and Shawnee Shea and Tony Brosson. So they can rely on having only three forwards up there and hope that those guys, as they did against Cork, and hope that those guys are going to get you enough scores to get you over the line. Now, ultimately, that didn't prove successful, obviously, in the way that they played against Cork. But it was probably something they were looking at towards Dublin down the line to make sure that they had enough defensive cover while, you know, unless you're getting to 23, 24, 25 points, you know, 120, you're not going to beat Dublin, you know. So unless you're putting up 20, 23 to 25 points, you've no chance. You're not going to keep them to 10 or 11 points or like, you know, 116, 117, 118. They're going to get that on a bad day. So you're going to have to get above that. So if you can get above that with talent like David Clifford or Tony Brosson, these guys up, if they're going to get you more than that, then great. If not, you're going to have to commit more bodies forward to make sure you're trying to get enough scores.
Would you like a cut at managing David Clifford and Tony Brosnan at Sunday?
I'm not sure if they're interested in transferring to Leash, but yeah, if they want to do that, we'd be more than happy to talk about it.
Very, very nicely done. Very nicely done. Do you think? Do you think Meath have a shout?
I'm not sure. I'm slow to say any team doesn't have a shout because the way they're banging in goals, they're going to be a threat. And they obviously got five the last day, and they got seven against Wicklow. And people say it's only Wicklow. You still got to put seven goals in any game is scoring. And I think that'll give them a chance. The fact that they are a goal threat, and it's obviously something that they've been working on because they're banging them in all year. So they played them in the league, and it was what, 3 or 4 points I think in the league game. You know, they have the big difference between Meath now and Meath a couple of years ago is their size and athleticism around the pitch. Like I was blown away by and we've seen it before, I know, but Dublin's like running ability and their power in that middle third, like this is going into the 60th minute of a game that's already done and dusted, and they're still running over the top of you with incredible pace. Meath are much better capable, are much better prepared, I suppose, or further down the line to be able to cope with that. Like the Brian Mentons and these guys are big, strong athletes who are hugely mobile and get up and down the field. And they've got a lot of those guys now, with Andy McAtee has added a lot of those fellas. So I think they'll be very competitive. Now, I don't see them beating Dublin, but again, a bit like the 4 minute mile, until we see it done, you know, we can't really expect anybody to do it.
Oisín, Ciarán, Meath.
Again, I've only seen Meath in their league games, to be honest. But from what I have seen, I thought they have looked impressive and look, particularly last week, obviously scoring the 5 goals again. But the most kind of, I suppose, interesting thing about that was, I suppose, they had 10 different scorers in their game the last day, which is impressive. Like 5 different goal scorers. And then like Costello from half back getting 1-1. I think they're certainly playing the game that Mike just described that needs to tackle Dublin and get into Dublin. They're certainly playing that attacking style. But as you said, as Mike said there, their athleticism has really stood out in relation to their improvement over the last number of years. And I certainly give them a little bit of a shot. I think they'll come close, but I do think Dublin will just have the edge, which is good for where Meade's at. Like, I was preaching last day like that the team shouldn't be in the business for honourable losses. And I'm sure Meath are going into that mindset with that mindset as well. Look, they want to beat Dublin to Leinster final. There's a lot on the line. But I do think Dublin might just nick this one.
I just think Meath seem to keep getting the most out of they got the most, I think they got the most they could get out of last season. I think they're getting as much as they can out of this season. I think the championship run was important to them. But I think their performances in Division 1 were very, very credible. And I think you're going into this game and you look at Costello, like, you know, he's played all of his football at corner forward, all of his football, and they've developed and they've had a look at him, and you know, he's a strong runner, he's very, very athletic. He's getting into the shape that they would sort of want him around. Like, if you have Donald Keoghan and him in the one line, you know, you're going okay. So I think Meath are going in the right direction. I think that we can't gauge everything against what you do against Dublin. I think there is an opportunity for teams to progress in a certain way. I think Dublin are, at this moment in time, the elephant in the room, because when people talk about tiers, I do think that, and I'm not going to rehash what we've talked about in the last couple of weeks, but I do think that Dublin are a tier on their own, and then there's probably 2 tiers after that. But I do think that, you know, we can't keep gauging everything against Dublin. I mean, if we start doing that, as far as analysis and punditry goes, we're going to be in a very lonely place, and we are responsible for some of where Dublin are at, because of the nature of the conversation time after time. I am in no doubt how good Dublin are. But Jesus, I don't care how good teams are, generational teams, different sports, there's always somebody that can knock them off the park.
Would you like to have had a cut at them? Would you like to have had a cut at them when you were playing? Your Armagh team.
Armagh team, yeah. Of course, we would have liked to have a cut on them. I don't know how we would have fared against them. But you'd always want to have a cut against the best. I mean,
Which of the backs would you have liked to have had a run at, Oisin? Which of them would you like to have had a right go? We know Kieran was talking 2 weeks ago how he devastated Thomas Sullivan in the Munster semi-final. Given
that's not true.
Which of the backs, Oisin, would you go for? Who would you want
right
to see trotting
right
over
now?
To? Yeah,
Philly. I love to get 70 minutes on Philly at the minute. I think that, you know, I think in the last couple of years, he has concentrated more on how he is offensively than how he is defensively. To be honest, I think, just like Mike said, I think they can be got at. But I just think there's such a collective now and there's a collective willingness to work. I think 5 years ago, I watched him playing against Derry in a league final. And I keep going back to that game, because that was the first day I seen a stubborn Dublin, because Derry came to keep the score down, to play very, very defensively, and Dublin just matched them up and said, listen, lads, we don't care how we win. Doesn't have to be, we don't have to play exuberant, go-forward football, and we're happy to win, playing whatever way you want to play. And they matched them physically, and that was the first day I seen them become stubborn, and they've been stubborn ever since. So if you go and play in a certain way, they're able to match you up. They don't overthink it, and again, they eventually overpower you. I'll just go back to the point I made last week. Still don't think they're as devastating off the bench as they have been, but they still have a lot of firepower.
Can I just say there, Oisin, and I know Quirk, you mentioned it there as well, Dublin's performance and their system and their strategic style of play. I'm finding like what the most impressive thing is, and you can see it with all the really like the great teams, really, their ability to not let the scoreboard or the game dictate how they're playing. Like, so they've set the bar so high, right, in relation to how they're playing the game, and they're going out against, you know, teams that, you know, they might not necessarily have to get, you know, as much up for, but they're going out with the same attitude and they're punishing them. And I think that's the most impressive thing about this team, is that they go out in every game they play and they go out playing to the system, everyone knowing their role, playing their role and doing that to the best of their ability, and leaving everything else happen after that. And that's kind of, to me, looking from the outside in, that's what I'm seeing is setting them apart from, you know, the teams that are, you know, the top teams that are getting closer and closer, I think. But their ability to do it consistently and not worry about any of the external things that are going on outside of the Dublin camp, I think has been the most impressive thing from their side of things. I don't know if you'd agree with that, Mike, or...
Yeah, 100%. And like, I mean, if you go back 15 years, lads, like that you would be saying the opposite about Dublin. Like you'd be saying all they're concerned about is what's going on off the field, and now, like, you don't they've missed Jack McCaffrey, is obviously a huge loss to any team, but they just kind of get on with it and somebody else steps up, and they're just, I find that, though, that the psychological part of that and their motivation to eviscerate every you know minnow that they come up against is as good as when they're playing the Kerrys or the Donegals or anybody else. It's that mindset. Johnny Cooper's roaring, lads. Like, with they're up 19 points and there's 2 or 3 minutes to go, and Johnny Cooper's roaring. Like, about, they put up 3 minutes of injury time, and Johnny Cooper's roaring about 3 minutes of injury time. Let's get 3 more scores, you know. And like, they're up 20 points or whatever it is, and you're saying, Jesus, man, like that. And I know part of that maybe is a bit of show, and it's a bit of, you know, like, this is our mindset and we'll let it, but it seems like a genuine kind of a thing, that this is just the way they approach every game, and it's a brilliant place to be, obviously.
Sorry, yeah, Oshin, we're building Dublin up there again.
Yeah. No, but I do agree with you, and again, I've seen this in the league final 3 years ago as well, was that Cluxton come out to the middle of the field, Philly McMahon had gone missing, gone up forward, so he could get a score to win the game comfortably. Dave McConnelly was trying to spray passes with the outside of his boot, giving the ball away. Cluxton up to the top of the field, up to the middle of the field, shouting at both of them first and foremost, but then shouting towards the lane. Jim Gavin, 2-3 minutes later, both of them were hauled off. And I can imagine that a lot of the concentration was not around, listen, we have another league title in the bag. A lot of the concentration was, lads, we went rogue again. Do you know what I mean? We don't want anybody on this panel who's going to, you know, go and do his own thing. It sounds like it's the minutest details, but I suppose when you get to Dublin stage, you have to, you start picking on the minutest things, because
there's nothing massive or major that you need to talk about. And when you get to that stage, such a lovely place to be in as far as, you know, a team and a manager and everything else.
But you're talking about Cluxton there, and like I mentioned, Johnny Cooper, and you can go through them. Like it's they have super leadership, like from their players, like that they've obviously, like, you know, empowered their players to be the guys that are really driving this thing. And it's, you don't hear Desi or you don't hear anybody else shouting. It's the players that are really, like, forcing the issue and driving on, and Fenton's talking and everything. And I know it's easier to do that when you're on top and you're winning games. But like it's obviously something that's been a big part of them, is that developing that leadership with the players, that they're the ones that are really driving the thing as opposed to the manager or anybody else doing it, you know?
It's interesting being in UCD, meeting Dublin footballers. I've met footballers from different counties, but Dublin footballers, and I met a Dublin footballer 2 days before they played Carlow a couple of years ago in the championship. And I was prodding a little bit and basically saying, look, you know you're going to win. Everybody knows you're going to win. How are you preparing for this match? And he just looked at me like I had six heads on me, basically saying, not thinking about them, not thinking about winning the match, thinking about playing the match, thinking about the process of it. And it says, this is no problem. And it was absolutely, that's the mindset that you're talking about, Oisin. We're going, and we will go from start to finish, and we will not stop until it's done. If we can just look west for a second, if you were James Horan, and you know you're back in the semi-final, based on the team or the squad that you have, what's the one thing that you would do or focus on now to help Mayo lift Sam?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that Mayo are where they were. But for the season that's in this with the knockout championship, and they find themselves into the last four, I think they're kind of coming in with a little bit of almost a free shot. I don't think there's anywhere near the same kind of pressure on Mayo this year as there was in the previous years. Like, their own supporters are the most expectant bunch in the country, you know, that they kind of want success and demand success every year, despite the fact that they very rarely get it at a national level. But I think this year, just the fact that they don't have that kind of pressure, they don't have that big monkey on their back, they're after getting over a Galway team narrowly in a kind of final that would have been seen as a big, big threat this year after the way Joycey started the year with them. So I'm not sure. I just think they're going to have a little bit, I think they're going to be a little bit, not carefree, but a little bit more relaxed and a little bit less pressure on them to really get a result. And I think, you know, they're probably not as strong as they were. I'm not sure about their newer guys just yet, but I think James Horan, to be honest, is going to be pretty happy to be in this spot, and whatever comes after this comes, you know.
What would you do?
I think primary possession, I think, is the one that I keep coming back to with Mayo. And I think you're Mike's right. If you're James Horan, I think you go and shoot it out. And I think Mayo are in a better position in the forward division than they have been in some time. I think they have they are a nice bit more direct, a good bit more direct than they have been as well. And primary possession is probably going to come back and haunt them.
Do they have an elite level midfield, basically?
I think Rowan is a perfect foil, and proved that last year. He's the perfect foil for a big man around the middle. Loftus has been very, very good. You know, he could have very little complaints.
A lovely footballer.
Yeah, he could have very little complaints about his ability. And you know, he started to learn a lot about playing in that position, because obviously the position seems a little bit alien to him at this level. But it just goes back to that ability to win your own ball in the middle of the field, and that's where I think that's the thing that I think will come back to haunt him. But I do think there's a way around that. I do think that, you know, Aidan O'Shea, you know, at 11 for your kickouts and get a few players around them. I mean, like anybody, lads, who watched the car crash that was the second half of Down trying to win primary possession last week, there's a massive learning curve in that. I mean, I don't know what's wrong, because it's a tactic that they've used before. They used it in the first half. Paddy Talley used it with Galway. of overloading one side and getting in there and trying to win a break. I mean, I know that won't work all the time. I know you won't win all the breaks, but Jesus, when the house is coming down around you, I mean, that's the one that I will be going to. And I think, you know, Mayo have 3 weeks to try and work something out. And I think, you know, it's time for them to start implementing that. I mean, you see Dublin implementing things that against weaker teams that they're obviously going to use down the lane. And I think that's maybe what Mayo need to do now as well, is to start implementing things immediately in the next 3 weeks and seeing if they can that could work for them down the lane.
Do you think just to look at the Ulster final in general, or Gaelic football in general, really, do you think tradition matters?
Not so much anymore, no. I think there's a lot less emphasis on it. I think tradition is something. I think tradition and how you view teams is something which has a shelf life and lasts a certain amount of time, and then things start to move along. Because if it's okay, I'll go back to United. I mean, people hated coming to Old Trafford. They were 1-0 down before they came. Now they're 1-0 up. And I think, you know, tradition has been turned on its head in that regard. And I think it's the same with Gaelic football.
Mike?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think in some sense tradition is great when you're, you know, to get people playing the game, to get people playing with your club, to get people playing with your county, to have that kind of belief amongst supporters, because it's been there before and it's been bred into them through their fathers and their mothers and their grandparents. And that side of it is really important. But ultimately, if you're in a team or you're preparing to play anybody, like what they did, you know, 50 years ago or 100 years ago is pretty irrelevant, really. And it's about trying to build your own tradition within a new group, really. And you know, and what you do throughout your playing career, whether that's 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 years, that's the tradition you're worried about creating. And you do that by winning games and you know, getting as much success as you can. But what went on 100 years ago for that current playing group is pretty irrelevant, really.
I would add one thing to that, Mike. I think you're absolutely right in terms of getting people playing. I'd add to it, though, that I think where tradition does matter is where it sets the bar of expectation for success. Mm-hmm. So the bar of expectation for success, Kerry, is an All-Ireland medal or five. Isn't that right? And for in cross, it's a championship
for
every
sure,
year, really.
If you look at the likes of, like we were speaking about Mickey Hart earlier, like he created their own tradition by starting from scratch with a group and achieves incredible success. So he's the guy now that has created that tradition of success in Tyrone, albeit there was very, very little before he was there. So, you know, you're 100% right. But I think every group, whether you're a player, a manager, coaching, your thing is about creating your tradition with your group. And that's the narrative now. That's what matters now. It's not about what happened previously, I suppose.
I asked the question because in looking at the Ulster final this weekend, Donegal are in the great golden age of their history. In if you look at their Ulster Championship successes, 2011, 2012, 2014, 2018, 2019, going for the first three in a row in their history, it would basically make six Ulsters in 10 years is more or less what they've won. In the previous 123, they'd only won five. By contrast, Donegal won their first. Oh, so Donegal's first Ulster was in 1972. By that stage, Cavan had won 38 Ulster championships, and have only won one since. And it's amazing. Or it's not amazing, really. But if you look at Cavan, that tradition, it's kind of has disappeared, really, because it's two generations past. It hangs in sepia pictures on walls. But that's no help when you go out over the field. And it's very... Can you make a case for the machine on Sunday?
It's difficult. It's difficult, Paul. But again, just to try and flip back to the Meath thing, I think Cavan, if you look at Cavan's season, I think unlucky to go into Division 3. I think Mickey Graham had to pick
his team up after relegation, go into the Monaghan game, be more or less obliterated in the first half, I suppose after the initial 5 or 10 minutes, pick them up again, they come back, they win that game. Antrim, they're very poor against Antrim. Antrim had them on the rack, had an opportunity to score a goal after half time. As soon as that score is missed, Cavan go up the field, get a score, tag on a couple more, win the game fairly comfortably in the end. Last week, completely done, a dead duck at half time, completely. And to turn it around, I've watched them now. I've seen all of their games live. They have almost 300 minutes in the bag. When they've pushed and they've pressed, they've looked very, very good. Very, very good. Albeit not up against, you know, the quality of team that they're coming up against at the weekend. Not the quality of, well, arguably not the quality of goalkeeper that they're coming up against at the weekend, although Began is obviously very good, but had a tough time towards the end of the Monaghan Cavan match. But I just think that I find this very interesting now at the weekend as to Mickey Graham's mindset, how he sets them up. And as a manager going into that game, do you do what Cavan have done so far and has worked for them in that you try and keep it tight for a certain amount of time, but Cavan have tried to keep it tight now against Monaghan, 8 points down at half time, try to keep it tight against Down, 9 points down at half, at 10 points at one stage, 8 points down at half time, and then they're pushing the press and they're a completely different team. And I'm just wondering what would be wrong with them just, you know, doing that right from the start of the game. And like, they're not expected to win the game. And I'm just expecting, you know, Mike's talking about a free shot. I'm just wondering, you know, if that's the way Mickey Graham's going to approach the game and say, lads, let's just have an absolute go at this. Let's put Donegal under pressure, which they haven't really been since the 15, 20 minutes against Tyrone. I'm just wondering what they're going to do. Have they got a chance? I can't see them beating Donegal.
Yeah. Were you disappointed with Armagh last weekend?
I was disappointed. I listened to Mike's interview after on the Sunday game last Sunday night. And I go back to the Mike Tyson one. I'll use the Mike Tyson one. And Armagh went into the game with a plan. And Donegal went in with a plan. And Donegal were able to execute their plan without getting a punch in the face. And I don't mean literally. I mean, the plan's okay until you get punched a few times. And Armagh never raised a gallop. They never threw a punch. And that was the most disappointing thing for me. I didn't think going into the game we were going to win. But I thought we'd be able to
ruffle a few. Why does that happen? Why does it happen that you get to the biggest game of the season? And you're gone.
I think there was too much. I feel there was too. I think, you know, you have to set up in a certain way and you have to plan for as many things as you can. And sometimes things players plan for that many things or they're so ready for, you know, tactically how the game's going to play out that they forget to play. And I think that was a lot, I think, of what happened last week. And, you know, like the first 12 minutes of the game, I was sitting in the stand, I was going, this could not be going any better for Armagh. And then it just, all of the bricks came tumbling down and there was no pressure on the ball in the middle of the field. And if you're playing against Donegal and there's no pressure on the ball in the middle of the field, then you're absolutely, you're not going anywhere.
Mike, we do a thing at the end of each of the shows here where we go through the games and we call a winner for each of them. And like the two lads,
Kieran's in the lead.
Two lads, let's just say we have a two-tier competition here. One of the two lads predicted that Wicklow would beat Meath in Offaly, and it wasn't Kieran. So, but we'll leave
you
it.
You said you'd never mention that again.
Sorry, yeah, cannot be trusted. So, the Munster football final, Mike. Who's going to win it? One word.
Cork.
Cork. Oisín.
Cork.
Kieran.
Cork.
Well done. The Leinster football final.
Dublin.
And Ulster.
Donegal.
And if there's to be a shock this weekend, which one will it come in?
Munster.
Ulster.
Ciarán.
Leinster.
I have to go something a bit left field. Like, keep up with our team.
Face is covered.
The whole ambition is to get you played in the dressing room before this season's over. Ciarán, that's a complete rank failure if we don't manage this. Lads, thanks a million for the last while, and we look forward to another weekend of twists and turns. I think they're certain again. With many thanks to Renault, and we'll talk to you lads again next week.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.